Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
We want to enter into this conversation with a little levity. So let's watch this video. Take a look.
We bought our bed.
Oh my God. Wait, are you two a couple?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were brothers.
Nope.
No.
Are you sure you're not brothers?
Yep.
Pretty sure.
Yeah?
Not brothers.
Not brothers.
No. Which one's the guy and which one's the girl?
We're both guys.
All right, right, okay. But like, you know.
Do you two just check out guys together all the time?
Yes.
Oh my God, you guys are getting married? I've never been to a gay wedding. Can I come?
We just met you.
No. Oh, I don't mind.
We were thinking of starting by painting the living room first.
Oh, okay.
What color do you guys think we should go with?
I don't know. What colors do you like?
Well, we had talked about pewter.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that a good color?
Why are you at?
Oh. Yeah. You know, my cousin's gay, Terry. Do you know Terry?
Yeah, gay Terry.
Yeah.
Gay Terry. Everyone's
yeah, gay Terry. Terry.
You guys, I need to pick out an outfit for the company Christmas party. Will you help?
Why are you asking?
All right, just checking on your room. Two queens?
He's talking about the beds.
Oh.
So when you guys are on a date like this, who pays?
So when you guys slow dance, who leads?
Who plans the brunch place? Do you guys take turns?
We own a brunch restaurant.
Of course you do.
Yeah, of course.
But you guys just wear each other's clothes, right?
Actually, that we do.
We do that once.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great.
I need a new gay best friend. Will you be my new gay best friend? Please.
We just met you.
You guys don't watch Real Housewives?
Are you sure you're gay?
We're pretty sure.
It'll so funny. Yeah.
So funny and also so sad, I think.
Right.
There was a number of questions, obviously questions that a gay couple gets, and there was a lot of humor there, but I think there was. There is that space for sadness, for pain, and there's this idea that ignorance is bliss, but ignorance can be very harmful to people at times. And we are people who are shaped by story, right? We're made of and moved by different stories. Experiences we have in our lives, the big stories that were fed growing up, like Dumbo, and the stories from the Bible for some people. All these different stories come together and shape how we experience the world and understand things. And the people who are asking those questions had particular stories that they were functioning with when it came to what it must be like to be a gay couple. And the stories didn't seem to be grounded in reality, or they were very stereotyped. And so we're entering into this conversation that matters by recognizing that our stories shape us, and it's important to recognize that and to hold that. And when we're entering into conversations like this, to recognize what is our own story, what have been our own experiences around, in this conversation, interaction with LGBTQ people. And Laura, I would love to hear about your experience growing up.
So I'm gonna try and make this not long-winded. I'm notorious for being a long-winded storyteller. So is Mike. So together we have like 3-hour gatherings where we just tell stories. No. So I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Go Paco. Mixed reviews. Okay. I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I grew up in a very privileged life. I went to Catholic high school and public schools all before that, but I went to a small, my graduating class was 172 in my Catholic high school. That was mostly made up almost entirely of white folks and mostly upper class white folks. And that was my experience. I was, the majority of my experience was surrounding myself with other upper class white folks. And but I also was, am a musician, as you have seen, and was, to live into the stereotype, I was very much part of music theater my whole life growing up. And met my best friend in high school. He was a year younger than me, and he was also in music theater, and he was gay. And living into the stereotype that all gay men must love music theater, which is was a part of the BuzzFeed video, which isn't true, turns out. But he was one of those, and he and I were very quick friends. We were in musicals together. But I want to preface this by saying, I know that not everyone's Catholic upbringing was the same as mine, but mine was quite strict and very surrounded in shame and guilt, and it was very anti-LGBTQ, and that was taught to me over and over, and it was taught to my peers over and over, but it was especially taught to him over and over. And he was not the only gay person that was in that high school. There were actually many gay people and gay women, and but none, very few of them felt comfortable coming out. So I have very vivid memories of him and I having conversations and me not making sense of how I would have privileges that he wouldn't have, or that my, this person who was my best friend, who still is one of my best friends, was less than me, and he didn't deserve as much as I did, and he was bullied very badly, a lot. And he was a very popular, like, loved kid, but he was also, like, very, very bullied by mostly jock-type bros. And it that was an experience that I had, that I remember having conversations at the table with my parents and being like, I don't get this. This doesn't make sense. Why would my faith tell me that my friend Jacob is less than me? That doesn't make sense. I don't get it. Mm-hmm. And so then I went from my very privileged, very white, very one note experience, and I came up here to Minneapolis, and I went to Augsburg College, and that's Augie's what? Sorry. And if you know anything about Augsburg College, you know that is a very different story, that Augsburg College is very proudly and happily an extremely diverse community. It has a very, very affirmative, very welcoming, very successful LGBTQIA plus program for people who identify as LGBTQIA. And I was quickly reminded of, this doesn't make sense. This does not make sense that these folks get treated differently. They don't get, and that was before gay marriage was passed. And that was really maddening to me. And it created a very massive discourse in my story, because my whole family's Catholic, and I couldn't, that was the biggest thing that just I could not make sense of. Hmm.
Yeah, so my understanding is that kind of took you into this place of learning and growing and equipping yourself with knowledge and having conversations.
Right.
And out of that, I hear you often use in our conversations, you would identify yourself as a straight ally.
Right.
And you would also identify as cisgender.
Right.
So I need to know more about what those mean.
Right.
And I think it's really helpful in having these conversations that, you know, we all come to this as learners. You know, mm-hmm. You bring a certain humility because we don't know everything, right? Whatever the conversation might be, we can enter as learners and receive things and try to seek things without judgment, but to just listen. And I want to listen and hear from you. What is it? What is a straight ally? And also, what does it mean to be cisgender?
Yeah. So, I think it's really important. We were talking to Stephanie Voss about this actually too. When you talk about being an ally, there's a lot of people who would say, you know, a person in the LGBTQ community needs to award you that privilege of being an ally. Like you can't just be like, oh yeah, I'm an ally. I think that they're great, but I don't participate in that allyship. So it's really important that when we say that we're allies to that community, that we're being active in that allyship. It's not a passive. It's not a passive membership. It's not. We just sit and we say that. Yep. No, gay people are great and they can get married. So good for them. But it's really important that we. To me, my allyship means being really active in that and being really loud in my my beliefs and my convictions and my allyship. And that's what I hope to encourage is that if you want to be an ally to that community, that it's not a passive, it's a very active position that you hold.
So Jacob Swell talks a lot about being church.
Yeah.
Being an ally, that it's an active thing. I think we can resonate with that.
Well, and it's the really other important piece to that is as an ally, if you I identify as straight, and if you identify as that, and I know that you guys have had a really great conversations of talking about race as well. But me being a straight person, that means that I hold a lot of privilege. So that's an important part to also recognize and hold in your allyship is that you have the privilege to be that because you get to function in the world as a straight person, if you are straight, if you identify as straight, I do. So I get to function in the world at a higher level than people who identify as something other than that.
I think what you're getting at is like, so there's a dominant culture.
Right.
And the dominant culture has more privilege or it functions as this is what the norm is.
Right.
And so you enter into that space more easily in line with what the norm is. So maybe life is easier for you in a lot of ways.
Right. Well, and that's just real quick. That's a really important part of the conversation too of that normativity is very common and that's been a beautiful learning for me that I've got to, felt really happy and lucky to have is learning just what that privilege entails. So, and that normativity. So like, for example, heteronormativity, which is a term that means like the things that you see and the way that you are taught and almost all experiences that you have function in the norm that you are better if you are straight and you are probably better if you are white. So it's talking about, it's living into that normativity of, and that's you see that a lot in, if you just go home, that's a good homework practice. If you go home and you look through your magazines and if you look through your wedding magazines, that's mostly gonna be straight couples. That's mostly, if you watch movies and people are getting married, usually it's straight couples. If you're watching TV shows, that's kind of talking into that norm. And that's when you can loop that back to your privilege.
Got it. And then can you just briefly touch on cisgender as a definition? And those definitions are in your Sunday paper if you want to check them out there.
Yeah, so cisgender means that I identify as the gender that I was born with. That's something that we love to talk about, this learning, and there's this moving walkway that you jump on and you actively participate in, and that's something, cisgender is something that I learned about in the last couple of years. So that means I was born a woman, and I identify as a woman. And there are a lot of folks who were born, their gender is women, but they don't identify that way. And there's a lot more that can go with that. There's genderqueer, there's non-conforming, but cisgender means I was born a woman and that's what I identify as. So.
Got it. So we all enter this conversation from different spaces. And again, to assume this place of learning, Jacob's Well is made of a lot of different people who would identify differently, different sexual orientation, different gender orientation. And so we lift that up and recognize Laura and I are coming into this conversation as two straight people. We both would identify as allies in this, actively working to create safe space for learning and for affirming our LGBTQ brothers and sisters and their identities. We all come to this space from different places and different experiences. So many people have heard rhetoric from a young age that being gay or being a lesbian or queer is not okay. And maybe some people are still functioning with that voice. And so we recognize that all people are coming at this at a different place. And what we ground this conversation in is in love and growing in understanding. And the two of us, you know, our pitching mound is that we're throwing the ball saying that love and acceptance and actually affirmation of people and however they identify is something that we've found to be making sense to us. So honesty here, because honesty is the best policy. I didn't know what cisgender meant last week. And maybe some of you didn't know it until today. It's good to learn. It's good to be curious. It's good to ask questions. And as a community, having conversations that matter, creating safe space for just being humble, being real. Like, I don't know what that means. Can you tell me? And we can show up as human beings to one another and respond with compassion and sharing knowledge. So I hope that's an experience that comes out of here. So for the sake of time, because we're so chatty. So we talked about, there's five ways in which we can stand in solidarity with our LGBTQ peers. And you'll see those written in your Sunday paper. That first one, spend time listening, learning, and sharing views from your LGBTQ peers. Assume a place of learning. Seek out information. And so that's a good thing. We're all learning.
I just want to do one touch on that just for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And the learning and the sharing and the growing, it's also important to think about and acknowledge that your peers also may not want to be your educators. So sometimes they may not feel safe to say, you know what, I'm kind of tired of educating. I've been educating people about my identity and who I am for a long time, and today I don't want to do that. And you need to be able to give them the space to say no in that. And there's this really awesome thing called Google. But there's a lot of resources that you can find, and you can say, you know what, if I want to be an ally to this community and I want to do some learning and my queer peers don't want to teach me today, I can go and seek out those resources.
So we can share some of those throughout the week,
right,
through the Jacob's Well social media avenues. So assisting in curating safe spaces. This is for communities, for families, also in your businesses, nonprofits, media organizations. Do you want to touch on that briefly?
Yeah, so this also goes in, this kind of plays into, we talk about space, and that's a conversation that you have about taking up space. So, for example, me as a straight white person, I in general take up a lot of space, and my voice takes up a lot of space. So, and there aren't a lot of spaces for queer folks to be leading and to have their voice being the primary voice. So, what you can do as an ally is, again, you don't want to seek out your queer folks and be like, hey, let's do this together. But you can. There are businesses, there's small businesses, there are already organizations and nonprofits that are going on, and you can seek those out and say, what can I do, how can I help? But it's really important that it doesn't turn into if you identify as straight, that it's not your primary voice that is leading those conversations, because again, we don't know what that experience is like of being a queer person, and it's really important that queer people are able to lead those conversations and lead those curations of those spaces. Another really important thing, like, truly, money. Money is really important, and a lot of nonprofits are doing very immensely important work and are just barely scraping by. So, for example, Southside Cafe is just right around the corner, and that is a space that is doing really, really important education and really, really important work for LGBTQ people and specifically trans folks. And it's, you can truly just go sit your butt in that cafe and have conversations and buy food and buy coffee.
34th in Chicago, and it's a really good espresso.
Super, and like,
it's really good.
Great food.
Yeah.
And it's this space of learning, too. It's
34th
in Chicago.
Cafe Southside. Check it out. It's awesome.
It's awesome.
So it's also good, like, as parents, particularly heteronormative parents, like, how do we create spaces for conversations with our kids? And things are changing. So I'm a child of the 80s, and that conversation looked a lot different than it does in 2016. So I want to show you this video from Jimmy Kimmel. Just check this out about kids. Kids, you can watch this too.
Hopefully it's not like...
As you know, the Supreme Court decision on Friday in favor of same-sex marriage is controversial. Some people just don't like it. They don't believe in it. They don't think it's right. One of the most common arguments you hear is, how do I explain this to my kids? And it's a good question. At the very least, it's a fair question. You wonder if children are sophisticated enough to wrap their head around something like this. So we went out on the street today to ask kids what they think and what they know. And here they are. Kids share their thoughts on same-sex marriage.
Could you tell me what gay marriage is?
It's when two men and two women get married.
Is it when four people get married?
No.
Could you tell us what gay marriage is?
I know nothing about that yet.
You don't know anything about it? Why would anyone want to get married?
Because they love each other and they just feel a connection.
Do you think it's a good thing?
Yeah.
Do you know what makes somebody gay?
Yeah.
What?
I got a broken leg.
No. When should two people get married?
In the afternoon.
That's a good time to get married. Do you know what marriage is?
Yes.
What is it?
It's when a husband and a wife get married.
So what do you think gay marriage is?
When a boy get married, and a girl and a girl get married.
Oh, you're right. Do you think that's very hard to understand?
For some kids.
But not for you?
No, not really.
Do you think anybody should be able to get married?
If you're old enough.
Oh, very wise. Do you want to get married?
Yes.
When?
When I'm 30.
Why does anyone want to get married?
Because they're pregnant.
Because they're pregnant? Could you tell us what gay marriage is?
Where a boy marries another boy.
Okay, and could it be when a girl meets or marries another girl?
No.
Just a boy meeting another boy?
Yeah.
Wow, what would it be called if a girl married another girl?
Lesbianism.
Do you think anybody should be able to get married if they want to?
Yes.
How come?
Well, because if they want to, they should be able to.
Would you want to get married?
Not really.
How come?
Because when you get married, the other person is entitled to any money the other person has.
So it's a financial issue for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Kids are the best.
Kids are amazing. So part of that is to say this conversation is becoming more normed, and that's a wonderful thing. But it's really good to feel equipped as parents and asking for help and having conversations like these in a community is something that we can hope helps equip parents to have those conversations. And we don't need to be afraid. We don't need to be afraid to have tough conversations. And you can be less afraid when you have a plan, when you have some knowledge. So be seeking that stuff out. And that's why we're doing this today. Let's move on. So being an advocate for our LGBTQ peers, and if you hear homophobic rhetoric, speak up. So you want to touch on that at all, Laura?
Yeah, so I again, it kind of goes back into allyship, and I like to say my allyship is very active, and I know it can be really tough. I mean, I have a lot of relatives who are homophobic, for lack of a better word. But there are a lot of spaces that are homophobic. And for a long time, you know, I said, yeah, it's just easier to just let it go over and like hear the comments. And I don't want to create discourse. And, you know, there are spaces where sometimes you have to make some of those decisions. I'm a stinker and have chosen not to make those choices anymore. And it's amazing what you can do by just speaking up. But it goes back to also being empathetic of that person. I have seen much more success in meeting people where they're at and being like, well, let's start at square one and let's work towards figuring out why. And one of the best ways that I saw this happen, I worked on the Vote No campaign a few years ago, and I was cold calling people, and it was a blast. Not really. Had lots of conversations on the phone like that were pretty harsh and pretty ugh. And I kept being like, oh man, I'm just whooped. I don't know if I want to keep having these conversations. But engaging in them and meeting people where they're at, I mean, the Vote No campaign, truly, if you talk to anybody who worked on it, it was so successful because of the ground, like the grassroots organizing of people truly just going out and having conversations with people and saying, let's hear about your experience. Let me hear about your life and why you believe that gay marriage shouldn't be legal. And let's start from there, and then we'll work towards it. And I mean, if you can even look at the stats, at the beginning of the Vote No campaign, the majority of Minnesota was gonna vote against it. It was gonna vote yes. And because of major grassroots organizing, of storytelling, and going and having conversations with people, that changed, and gay marriage was passed in Minnesota for that reason. So,
yeah, there's a lot of power in storytelling.
Yeah,
it can change us, because I think in doing that we encounter people, right? We don't just encounter stories in the media or larger statistics or whatever, that messages that are put out there that aren't tied to like flesh and bone, right? When it's somebody's story, when it's someone you know, that makes a big difference. But briefly touching on bullying and kids, maybe you've experienced this. There's often peer pressure that goes on in school, and there's oftentimes derogatory words like, or even using the word like gay as an insult was very popular. When I was in middle school, it was really common to call somebody a fag. And I looked back.
It is a hurtful word for a lot of people.
It is. I actually looked back at my middle school yearbook, and I wrote fag on people that I didn't like on that yearbook. And I'm like, I think about that, and like, this is me. This is not who I am at all.
Most empathetic man on earth, yeah. As I call you.
Right, but seeing that ugliness on that page, like I was ashamed of that I even did that. But the peer pressure and the place of ignorance that I was coming out of, you know, it's really important that kids, that we find people around us who are speaking positively and not using harmful language like that and building up our friends and not tearing them down. And there's this great video, a PSA that Wanda Sykes did, and I think she puts it probably as good as it gets.
Yeah.
But let's watch that.
Yo, 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 check out this ship, right? Right?
It's so gay.
It's really gay.
Dude, look at those pants.
Please don't say that.
What?
Don't say that something is gay when you mean that something is dumb or stupid. It's insulting. It's like if I thought this pepper shaker was stupid and I said, man, this pepper shaker is so 16-year-old boy with a cheesy mustache. Just saying. When you say that's so gay, do you realize what you say? Knock it off.
Knock it off. Yeah. Yeah, changing the narrative and peer pressuring positivity is really important. So kids, be advocates for that in your school. Okay, acknowledging the role that the church has played in creating spaces that are sometimes unsafe for LGBTQ folk. Go.
Well, that for me, I mean, that can go back to my story. I grew up in a church that was an extremely unsafe space for LGBTQ folks. Absolutely, you're not welcome here. You can't get married here. In fact, who you are is wrong and bad. And that is very common still. And the church historically, as a whole, the big wide church, has historically been a really, really negative space for LGBTQ people. For example, many of my very closest friends identify as gay or LGBTQ, and I talk to them about Intertwine a lot, and how there's this massive need for community, for people that's surrounded in compassion and empathy and love, and I frequently get back, doubt it. I doubt it. I doubt that I can come into a church where I feel affirmed and safe, because I have never felt that way, ever. And so it's when you're having the conversation, it's really important to know that the church as a whole, and Jacob's Well is this like beautiful place that is honestly not really.
We're a community, not a place.
Sorry, correct me all day. In my view, and like, of course, we get the media that shows us a lot of negativity coming out of the church when it comes to folks that are gay or queer. But this isn't the norm, and it's important to acknowledge that. This is a really lovely, happy, wonderful space that a lot of queer folks could feel safe. But it's, to me, I think it's really, as a person starting a community, it's really important to me that we acknowledge just how damaging the church has historically been for queer folks, because it really has.
I wanna touch on that, because I mean, there is verses in the Bible that talk about heterosexual and homosexual acts. And there is teaching that has come out of that. And I think what's underneath all of it is, especially in the last, say, 15 years, we've really been attending to this as a larger church. But what is the role of the Bible? Like, how do you read the Bible? And there's this loud voice that says you have to read it literally and you have to read it this way. And oftentimes that voice is in line with maybe the dominant nature, the dominant culture, the dominant narrative of that time. But there are verses in here that say things about hetero or homosexual acts. And this is a book from 2,000, 3,000 years ago. And cultural realities are different then than they were now. But there's so many nuances to even the verses in here. And it's important to seek more information and to be asking questions. This book isn't made to be the rule book for your life and to tell you everything that you're supposed to do and exactly how to do it. If so, All the women, people who identify as women here, should be wearing hats. And if your kid keeps acting up, we can take them outside and stone them to death. Okay? We don't read the Bible that way. But it does tell us a story about what this thing we call God is up to in the world. And deep at the heart of that, I think, is the story of compassion and love and bringing curiosity and engaging in seeking after the mystery that is, what does it mean to be a human being? So Intertwined talks about Jesus as a way of being human. And I love this story from Matthew 15, and I want to read it. It's up there on the screen, but let me just read this story to you. Jesus left that place and went away to the district of Tyre and Sidon. Just then, a Canaanite woman from the region came out and started shouting, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." But he did not answer her at all. "What's up, Jesus?"
"Jeez."
And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she keeps shouting after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." So this woman is a Canaanite. That means she's not Jewish. And Jesus says to her, "I'm not here for her. I'm here for the Jews. I'm here for the Israelites." But she came and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, help me." And he answered, "It's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. It's not fair for the good stuff that's meant for the Jews to just give it to the dogs, the non-Jews." And she said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table." And then we see this change. Jesus answers her, "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done to you as you wish." And her daughter was healed instantly. What if Jesus presents us with this way of being a human, this way of human being? And in this, we see that we can be changed, that our person can be changed through an encounter with another person, that compassion could move us to not see this person as a dog, but as a human being who's worthy of love and acceptance, just as the dominant culture, or just as my people are worthy of love and respect and healing. I think this is an amazing story in the Bible where we see Jesus have this shift, where we see Jesus and his mind changed, that his mind is open to a more radical love than he had even thought in the beginning. That's a really powerful story. So this book says a lot, and you can read it in many different ways. But I think the loudest voice that comes out of it is love and compassion and a willingness to honor the human being or the life that we see around us. And in so doing, realize that we're honoring ourselves and the connections that make this life so great. That felt really sermony.
It was pretty sermony.
It was really preachy.
It's okay. It was good.
Good. We're taking up a lot of time here, and it's hot, and people probably want to like go grill and things like that.
Lie their bodies in a pool all day, or like just have like water poured on their faces.
Yes, yeah. Or move. You know, you can move.
That's what I have to
Laura's going to be moving this afternoon. Great
I'm
choice.
So thrilled.
Yeah. But maybe one more thing, like, what's this last thing about getting in contact with local legislators and things?
Yeah, so that is as simple as, we live in Minnesota, and Minnesota has been a really great forerunner of progressive conversations and thought and bills as a whole when it comes to, and that's not all of Minnesota, but that is some of Minnesota when it comes to queer folks. But there's a lot of conversations, as you've seen, I'm sure, about the bathrooms and bathroom use for trans folks. And that bill is very harmful for those folks. And it's very harmful, and it's actually rooted in that fear. That fear that, and it's rooted in this narrative that people who identify as trans are pedophiles, and that has been or are going to be harming your children and seeking out bathrooms to look at the other gender naked, and that's locker rooms, bathrooms. And it's important that we talk about how damaging that is, because that's so damaging for people who identify as trans, because that, again, goes back to calling something gay, and that you're saying that that is bad or that is negative. And the assumption in that bathroom bill is that trans folks are bad, and when in reality, people just want to be able to use the bathroom that they identify as, and they want to be affirmed in that. So that's a simple, I mean, I think a Minnesota legislator tried to introduce that bill recently again, and a lot of people said, not here, don't do that here. But it's having that conversation too. And we could go into having conversations about gun control and having conversations about legislation when it comes to any sort of gun control. And that's really in light of the Orlando massacre. And I'm a person who believes that we could use some more gun control, and if that's something that you believe, then contact your legislators about that and tell them.
Yeah, those are all important and, again, difficult conversations. There's lots of nuances. There's a lot of different perspectives, and there's large narratives that are loud out in our society. So as we enter these difficult conversations, remembering to ground them in story and experience. Recognize where you're entering into the conversation from, and ask that person that you're in conversation with, what's informing their story and their understanding of things. Creating that space for understanding and not judgment brings in much more possibility than we've got a really polarized world right now, and we need to find ways of moving above and beyond that. Yeah, well, thanks for taking the time. Again, we'll shoot out some resources to you all, and just thanks for being in this important conversation with us.
Happy Pride weekend.
Yeah, why don't you guys sing some more songs?
Okay, we're gonna, okay.
And, yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.